Welcome to What I'm Cooking for Dinner,
a podcast that takes you on a culinary journey through my mind. I'm your host, Haley, and I'm thrilled to invite you to join me on this delicious adventure. We all know that deciding what to cook for dinner can sometimes feel like an insurmountable challenge. Whether you're a culinary expert or a kitchen newbie, we've all faced the same question: what's for dinner tonight? But fear not, this podcast is here to inspire and guide you. This episode is going to be a little bit different from my normal episodes. I'll still go over what I've been cooking this week, but I also wanted to talk about something else that's been on my mind and is really important to me, and that is cooking with ADHD. If you're not already familiar, ADHD is a neurological condition that affects executive functioning, impulse control, attention, emotional regulation, and sensory integration. Most people associate it with young children, usually male, who cannot sit still or focus, but it is a lifelong condition that you never outgrow. ADHD is a spectrum and can affect people differently and with different severities. For example, some people with ADHD forget to eat for long periods of time, while others are not impacted in that way. So I'm going to talk about how having ADHD impacts cooking for me. I'm speaking from my own personal lived experience, and like I said, this could be a completely different situation for someone else with ADHD. One of the biggest struggles for me with ADHD and cooking is executive functioning. Executive functioning is in charge of things like planning, starting and stopping tasks, evaluating progress, speeding up, slowing down, switching tasks, time estimation, and focusing. These are all things that are necessary to do when you are cooking. With my ADHD, my executive functioning is underpowered. You may not see this or notice this when talking to me because I am high masking, which means I'm good at faking being neurotypical. My underpowered executive functioning makes it difficult for me to plan, estimate time, switch between tasks, and focus when making a meal or baking. The other day I was making these turtle melon pan buns. I read the recipe once through, and it seemed like it was something that I could easily execute. I'm not a novice baker. It was definitely in my skill set. I'm not the type of baker or cook that gets everything out first and measures everything. I get things out and measure as I go along. See that planning part of executive functioning. I make my dough as the instructions tell me, and I have it in the mixer. Because I have a lot of experience with baking bread, I know that something is not right with my dough. It's sandy and kind of curdled looking. I figure it's too dry, so add more of the egg that I still have left over. It's still not coming together after 10 minutes of kneading in the mixer. The recipe states that the dough at this point should be sticky, but it is very much not. I add more milk and I end up with a huge mess on the counter. I toss the dough out because it's not correct. I start over. I read the ingredients again. I read the instructions again. I make the dough. It's better this time. I use the entire egg this time around instead of the 2 tablespoons called for in the recipe. And just as an aside here, recipe writers, please do not make people measure out tablespoons of egg. It's really fucking difficult. However, after 10 minutes of kneading in the mixture, it is a very stiff dough and not supple or sticky the way it should be. My frustration is high at this point. You know, see that lack of emotional regulation I spoke about earlier. So I throw this dough out too. I know that I can't add anything to it at this point to make it better. I go back to the recipe and I read it a third time. I finally see in the list of ingredients an extra 70 milliliters of water that I missed the first 2 times. By this point, I have run out of all-purpose regular flour. Guess what? This recipe actually calls for bread flour, which I don't have. And so I have to use 00 pizza flour that I've had on my pantry shelf for quite a while. I am determined to make these damn turtles at this point. But back to that missing 7 milliliters of water. How could I have missed this ingredient after reading the ingredients and the directions multiple times? Well, first, my brain has difficulty reading recipes without missing details. Secondly, my brain arranges and retrieves information in a unique way. When I initially read the recipe, the water was listed after the oil that was going to be used for oiling the bowl where the dough will rise. Typically, ingredients are listed in the order that they get used in the recipe. The water was listed after the oil for the bowl and before the egg for the egg wash. In my brain, I grouped together the water and the egg for the egg wash together as part of the egg wash and not something that would go in the dough. Once I had unconsciously decided that this is how the ingredients were grouped, I disregarded the water listed in the step of other wet ingredients that got added to the dough. It wasn't until I went back the third time, consciously told myself to slow down when reading, that I noticed the water in the wet ingredients for the dough. My third dough was successful, and the entire bake turned out great in the end. Besides this kind of messing things up with recipes, how else does ADHD affect cooking for me, and how have I adapted to it? Well, I make myself plan out meals for the week, but I make them flexible enough that I can always rearrange something. I make sure to have a lot of variety in my meals with leftovers that can be utilized in new dishes. Because my brain craves novelty and dopamine, I have a hard time with eating leftovers or eating similar things in the same week. Another way that ADHD impacts cooking for me is grocery shopping. Grocery shopping used to be really anxiety-provoking for me. I would get overwhelmed by all the options and possibilities that come with a store like Safeway or Albertsons. Plus, the stores were always rearranging their products, and I would get confused each time I would go there. The stores were loud and bright and crowded. Instead of continuing with this, I decided to start shopping almost exclusively at Trader Joe's. While I understand that some people have an issue with Trader Joe's because it can be crowded and the parking lots are terrible, I find a lot of comfort in shopping there. First, the stores are small, and they don't rearrange things often, making it less confusing for me. They have a limited range of products, which reduces decision fatigue. They have seasonal limited products, which allows me to make small impulse buys and gives me the novelty my brain craves. Their products don't have GMOs or high fructose corn syrup, so I feel slightly better about buying highly processed snacks. I make sure to go early in the morning so I don't have to deal with crowds or as much difficulty in the parking lot. I also shop online and at the farmer's market. I get an omnivore bundle from the online farmer's market. I don't have to make a lot of decisions when I get the bundle. I build my menu around whatever is in the bundle that week. For example, this coming week's bundle, which I completely forgot to complete my order for, so I'm not actually getting, is going to be bratwurst, sourdough, jalapeno cheddar, kale, peppers, green cabbage, red potatoes, and yellow onions. I would probably have a bratwurst sandwich with peppers and onions, and then on another day do a hash with potatoes, peppers, and onions, and then on another day do a potato soup with kale and cabbage. While these all have similar ingredients, they are different dishes, and I don't end up getting bored. It helps that food and cooking and baking are my hyper-focus, so I'm not the type of person to skip meals and get low blood sugar. I do have to make sure that I eat regularly, or I do get low blood sugar and become extremely cranky. One area that I do really struggle with is drinking enough fluids. I almost never feel thirsty, so I rarely remember to drink water. And I know this will be hard for some people to believe, but water tastes pretty disgusting to me. I will drink it when I am thirsty or after a workout when I know I need to hydrate, but my brain will keep telling me that anything besides water to drink will always be better. It's something that I have to consciously force myself to do. In all, ADHD makes cooking and baking and meal planning more difficult because cooking requires a lot of executive functioning and impulse control. However, cooking and baking with ADHD can be a lot of fun. I get to be really creative with my bakes and with my cooking, and I get to use this outlet to talk with you all about it. All right,
So enough about that. Now let's get on to what I've actually been cooking for dinner. First up, we have tortellini soup, which I think I've talked about before on the podcast. This is our go-to soup once the weather gets cold. You can find the exact recipe at Damn Delicious, but essentially this is a tomato-based soup with sausage and greens and tortellini. We've switched up by using different sausage, different kinds of greens, and types of tortellini. This time around, we used mild Italian sausage, kale, and cheese tortellini, which is what the original recipe calls for. I also added some leftover farro from another meal and some leftover meatballs from another meal. Soup is a great vehicle for leftovers. Next up, we have sticky soy meatballs with pickled vegetables and mango. This was based on a recipe from Pinch of Yum called Sticky Ginger Meatless Meatballs with Pickled Vegetables and Mango. However, I realized that I did not have any ginger when I got home from grocery shopping, and Trader Joe's didn't have any meatless meatballs. I got the party-sized beef ones instead. I skipped the ginger in the recipe and made it with regular meatballs. The recipe called for cucumbers as a vegetable, but I'm not a huge fan of cucumbers, and I had a boatload of red onions. I decided to do pickled red onion and shredded carrot instead. Add in some diced mango and serve it on top of rice, and you've got yourself a nice lunch. And as I said earlier, the leftover meatballs got used in the tortellini soup. Next up is the green chili and cheese stuffed chicken, which honestly looked like something a cat barfed up, but tasted amazing. This was based on a recipe from Recipe Tin Eats called Jalapeno Popper Stuffed Chicken. I had a jalapeno pepper, but I wasn't sure if it was going to make it until I was able to make this recipe. So instead, I bought a can of diced green chilies as backup. The diced green chilies are great because they last a long time. They're canned. And also because they're not as spicy as the jalapeno, which makes it a little easier for the kids to eat. They still didn't like this dish, but that's okay. They ate leftover soup for dinner the night I made this. You can't win every time. But essentially, this is a chicken breast stuffed with cream cheese, shredded mozzarella cheese, Parmesan cheese, and diced green chilies. You sear the chicken on the stovetop for 2 minutes on each side, then move it into the oven where you bake it on 350 for 20 minutes, if it's my cold oven, and then broil it for another 5. We ate it with green salad and some sourdough. The cheese mix that kind of oozed out and browned was delicious spread on some little Applegate sourdough from Rise Up Bakery. Then we have the Hokkaido milk buns shaped into cats. These are from Baking with Kim Joy, who you might remember as the contestant from the Great British Bake Off, who made the ridiculously cute animal-shaped bakes and was wildly creative and artsy. I recently purchased her cookbook, and we're having a lot of fun with it. The turtle buns that I mentioned earlier in the episode were also in this cookbook. But I'll be getting back to those in a moment. These little cat buns were so cute! It was my first time doing the Tangzhong method, which is where you make a roux to trap in the moisture in the bread. I thought these turned out nice, but I'd like to experiment a bit more and maybe add a filling next time. I think I also didn't measure my salt correctly because they were a little bland. I also want to continue working more on shaping with bread and being a little bit more creative in that way. And for the faces on them, I used an edible food marker, and this was not the easiest thing to use on the egg wash surface of the bread. You have to kind of, when you're working with it, you have to angle it in a specific way, otherwise it won't actually mark. I don't know if that's been other people's experience with edible food markers or not, and if they have a brand that they like that they feel like works really well. And then lastly, we have the turtle-shaped melon pan buns. Melon pan is a Japanese bread that does not taste like melon. It refers to the pattern that's on top of the bread. The dough is a lightly enriched dough. It has milk and egg, but no butter. And a cookie crust on top, sort of like a concha. I filled mine with chocolate, but other typical fillings include red or black bean paste, or they are served plain. I added green food coloring to the cookie crust to make it green like a turtle, but you can also color and flavor it with matcha powder. They were quite light and fluffy with a nice crunchy contrast coming from the cookie crust. Other than having to make the dough 3 times because of the ADHD tax, it was a relatively easy recipe to make, if not time-consuming because of the different elements. They rose nicely, they had a good texture, and I'm glad that I added the chocolate filling because otherwise I think they would have been a bit on the bland side. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of What I'm Cooking for Dinner. I hope you're leaving with some food for thought and ideas for your next meal.
If you've enjoyed this culinary journey, please consider subscribing to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you want to share your thoughts, recipes, or perhaps a story of your own, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out by sending an email to whatimcookingfordinner@gmail.com. That's whatimcookingfordinner@gmail.com. I can't wait to read your messages and maybe even feature some of your culinary adventures in future episodes. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at whatimcookingfordinner for behind the scenes sneak peeks, perhaps, delicious food photos, and updates on coming episodes. As I wrap up, I want to express my heartfelt thanks for joining me. Your support means the world to me, and I'm excited to continue sharing the joy of cooking with you. Until next time, happy cooking, everyone. And remember, it's not just about what's on the plate. It's about how many times you mess up making bread dough before it gets to the plate. Cheers.